This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
The Total Soccer Show, and our check-in with the 2021 Africa Cup of Nations. Yes, it's the 21 edition because this tournament was supposed to be played last summer and COVID ruins everything, as we all know. But just like a Sadio Mane 97th minute penalty, this tournament is better late than never, and it's been very entertaining and often chaotic thus far in Cameroon. My name is Ryan Bailey. Joining me today is my mater, who will talk about soccer near the equator, Taylor Rockwell.
Wow. Yeah. Is that a shoehorn in reference to cars or the equator? I'm very confused, Ryan Bailey.
Yes.
Perfect. How long did it take you to come up with that one?
Mere seconds. The amount of time it sounds like it deserves, Taylor, is the answer.
That's what I was figuring.
Taylor, how are you, by the way? You weren't on the weekend review this week. We haven't spoken this week. Talking about soccer near the equator, different weather situations in Richmond. How's the snow?
Snow is not bad in the city of Richmond. Surrounding areas, it was pretty bad. We have two more snowstorms coming, so we'll see how that goes. But the larger issue was daycare being closed. My wife, this is the very busy time of her work schedule, which meant it was me and our one-year-old hanging out all day, and it was as stressful as I imagined it would be.
Yes, I can only imagine. Well, I can actually imagine, Taylor. I have a six and an eight-year-old home for their second week from school because of COVID situations. They're fine, by the way. It's someone else in their class has a situation. So, yeah, I'm putting teaching assistant on my resume, by the way.
I mean, that's good for you. But I like that you can at least sort of give them stuff to do, give them assignments, or even just like plug them in front of a Disney movie. Whereas for me with a one-year-old, it feels like anytime I'm not actively paying attention to her, that's when she takes it upon herself to try to find the most dangerous thing she can at any given moment. And it does feel a little bit like she's daring me to not pay attention. And so I spent all of Monday paying attention to her. Didn't feel like it would be great to have her sitting on my lap as we recorded a weekend review and she tried to distract. So I appreciate that you all gave me the day off. I thought it was a lovely episode. You all did a great job, especially talking AFCON. And I was jealous. And now I'm excited we get to talk about it today.
We do indeed. And joining us to do so, Taylor, is a man who can give us the skinny on Equatorial Guinea and who will comment from afar on the Côte d'Ivoire, Graham Ruthven.
Very good, Ryan Bailey. That is one of your finest examples, rhyming examples, I have to say. I'm applauding I was going to say off camera, but no one is filming me right now. At least I hope not.
This is like when I'm going to denigrate Americans slightly, when they say, that's hilarious, and they don't laugh. You said, I'm applauding, and you're not applauding. Hey!
Is that better?
I have an American question for you all.
Go ahead. Speaking of
that, is it an American thing to, when someone says thank you, to say mm-hmm?
Yes.
I wondered. I've been told that, and I've been told that's a strange response to like...
That is a strange response. I've not heard that.
Mm-hmm. So, and also, the other strange one, Taylor, you bet.
Well, I've heard that.
Does that mean I'm welcome? I don't know.
Well, that's a favorite of... our good friend, Mr. Joe Lowry's, he'll say you bet at the end of the podcast. So I've been introduced to that one, but he has never said mm-hmm when you say goodbye to Ryan at the end of the podcast. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
We can find out more about this on our new podcast, Americans Say the Darndest Things, coming soon to the feed. In the meantime, we should probably talk about Africa Cup of Nations. We are in the midst of it. Both of you, I have a surprise for you. I have a quiz. The colour just drained from both Taylor and Graham's faces when I suggested a surprise quiz. But don't worry.
Off camera.
This is just a very quick quiz. I've got multiple choice answers. There's no wrong answers apart from the two wrong answers for each question, gents. So I'll get straight into it. For the question for both of you, multiple choice. Which team is nicknamed the Nzlang National, which means the National Thunder? Who are the National Thunder? Is it A, Equatorial Guinea? B, Mauritania? Or C, the Gambia? Taylor, what do you think?
I'm going to say the Gambia.
Graham?
I'm going to go with Mauritania, which I've only just learned how to pronounce correctly.
We are off to a flying start, James.
Oh, no.
You're both wrong.
No.
Equatorial Guinea is the answer. The National Thunder. Mauritania are the Lions of Chinguetti, which is an awesome nickname. The Gambia are the Scorpions, even awesomer, in my opinion. Yeah.
All right.
Question two.
The Scorpions.
It sounds very 80s metal, doesn't it? I love it.
Which team's called the Shrimps?
Are there any shrimp-based teams in this one, Taylor? You'd know. You'd be the authority.
Then I'd be all over it. Exactly, yeah.
Question two. Comoros, or the Comoros, are in their first ever major tournament here. Where is Comoros? Is it on the northern tip of the continent by Morocco, close to the Spanish Canary Islands? Is it landlocked between the DRC and Zambia? Or is it little island near Madagascar?
I know this one.
I know this one as well.
Islands near Madagascar.
Look at you, geography nerds. Well done.
It's because I literally looked it up today because I was like, I have no idea where Comoros is. And it led to me reading a whole bunch about their history. It's a very interesting country.
So there you go. We're learning. Every day's a school day, Taylor. A 719 square mile island, population 850,000, about the same as San Francisco. Did you know, Graham, it has two daily newspapers, its own TV station, and two radio stations? Isn't that marvelous?
If you say so, yeah.
Yeah, I do. I do say so. All right, one last question in the quiz. One last one for you. Who is the all-time AFCON top scorer? Is it A, Didier Drogba? Is it B, Samuel Eto'o? Or is it C, Rashidi Yekini, who is, for context, a Nigerian striker who played for Vitoria Setubal? And Hihon, he was 1993 African Player of the Year. A, B, or C? What do we think, Taylor?
Can I stall for time and ask you one more time what those names were?
Didier Drogba, Samuel Eto'o, Rashidi Yekini, ABC.
I'm going to say Samuel Eto'o. I missed him the first time, and I thought it might be him.
Wonderful. Graham?
The last one feels like it's not someone I'm familiar with, so it would be strange if he is in there and it's not him, but I still think Eto'o, yeah.
Oh, bingo, boys. You didn't fall for my red herring, my Yekini.
Yes.
Well done, both of you. Yekini is third highest scorer with 13 goals. Drogba is, he is joint eighth with 11 goals. Samuel Eto'o, the leader, 18 of them AFCON goals for Samuel Eto'o. What do you think of the quiz, Taylor? Was that fun? I thought it was fun.
It was, and since I answered the last one first and got it right, I win. That's how it works, Graham.
We all win. We all win. Everybody's a winner, apart from me. Anyway, let's get into the chat about this
Good
tournament.
Quiz.
We're in the, as we record, the 11th day, I believe. We're roughly halfway through. Three of six groups are concluded. Seven of 16 teams are in. Are decided to go through to the knockout stages. The round of 16 starts on January 23rd. That's this coming Sunday. The final is February 6th. And just a reminder of the structure, it's quite similar to the Euros. 24 teams, six groups of four. The top two in each group go through to the round of 16. Phase and the four best ranked third place teams. I'll start off with a general question. Graham, are you enjoying this tournament so far? We've got some great stories. We've got some emerging players and some interesting headlines have come out so far. What have you thought?
Yeah, very much enjoying it. I have to say that the initial phase of the tournament was slightly light on goals and drama. That part maybe wasn't so enjoyable, but it seems like from the moment that you had the episode of the referee blowing the whistle early twice in a match, that was a Tunisia versus Mali match, it seems like everything since then has been fantastic and very entertaining. I thought last night's games in particular, so we're recording on Wednesday, so Tuesday night's games, where when you had Comoros and Ghana playing at the same time as the other game in that group, which I have forgotten who is in that group. Who is in that group again?
Gabon and Morocco.
That's correct. Yeah, and that game was 2-2. And you had Achraf Hakimi scoring a wonderful free kick to make it 2-2. Oh. And I did that thing where I kept on flicking between the two channels and missing every single goal. But it was still, I thought that was the best night of the tournament so far. There was a lot of entertainment there.
Taylor, you loving it?
Yeah, I think whenever we do whenever we're able to cover big tournaments in more detail, it's always more enjoyable because when you come into the tournament knowing the teams, knowing the key players, knowing how they're going to try to play, it gives you that background. We weren't able to do that with this competition, and so I think early on it was about figuring out who does what and which names do I know and which names do I need to know. And I think as the tournament's gone on, it's been more and more fun because once you build that familiarity, you sort of know what you're looking for, you have expectations, and then the tournament has done a good job of subverting those expectations pretty consistently. So I think it's been really fun, and I look forward to the conclusion of the group stage and the beginning of the knockout round.
Plenty more to come. So on this pod, gents, let's go through each group and take a little review and see what's going on in each group. We'll start off with Group A, which is complete now. All four teams have been played. The hosts, Cameroon and Burkina Faso, are through. Cape Verde are in third. They are top of the third team rankings at the moment. Ethiopia in fourth place are out. Why don't we start with the host Cameroon, Taylor? Very strong home record they have. They did score four goals against Ethiopia, and I believe only Tunisia have also scored four goals in this tournament. They were among the favourites. Are you still feeling confident about them making a run, Tay-Tay?
I am. They were the team that I watched the first game of and then did not watch a ton of after that. I since have to prepare for this episode, and I do feel more confident about what they're doing. I think it's just sometimes they can lull you into the need for sleep because they keep the ball, they keep it moving, but they are less creative once they get towards goal, with the caveat that they've scored a number of goals. They scored four against Ethiopia, as you said. They get two in the opener against Burkina Faso, though those are penalties. But to me, they do a really good job of getting the ball back. It seems like they press after possession loss, work really hard to win the ball back, and once they do, they maintain possession. They'll go direct at times. They're obviously trying to find Abubakar, and I think thus far it has worked for them. So I think as long as they keep that kind of defensive solidity and that they're able to keep possession, keep the ball moving, and find those opportunities where they can, I think they have a good shot at making a run.
Graham, we have some MLS interest in this Cameroon team with Nuhu as well. What are your thoughts on what they're doing so far?
Yeah, Cameroon, we were speaking about this before we started recording. They are a bit of a paradox along the lines of what Taylor was just saying there. They have scored quite a few goals in this tournament so far. Abubakar is currently the top goal scorer with 5 goals in 3 games. He scored in all 3 games. Obviously, both of his goals in the first match, the tournament opener, came from the penalty spot. So it's difficult. That's maybe not the clearest gauge of how they play as a side, the number of goals they have scored, because as Taylor says, sometimes they can be quite conservative. I do like the look of their midfield, in particular Anguissa, as I think has had a very good tournament so far. He gives them kind of that structure and energy in the centre of the pitch. I am a big fan of Akambi, who's been playing out on the left side. He's had a good tournament, a decent tournament so far, but it does feel like maybe he can reach a higher level in the knockout rounds. And then, as you say, the MLS interest in this side, Nuhu, who is obviously of Seattle Sounders fame. He's been impressive for Cameroon in the 3 matches they've played. He's been playing on the left side of a back four, which is obviously slightly different to his left-sided centre-back role he plays for the Sounders, but obviously he was converted to that role, so he's just kind of going back to his natural position, I guess you could say. And I think that just demonstrates what an adaptable player he is. He gives them a lot on the left side, both in an attacking sense and also in a defensive sense as well. So he has been a standout player, and I think Seattle, it wouldn't surprise me if his stock is rising to the point where Seattle are getting offers for him.
Taylor, any thoughts on any players who've caught your eye on, any other players on Cameroon or anyone else in Group A who's caught your eye, perhaps?
I mean, I think Frank Zambo and Gisa is always worth mentioning just for what he does for them in terms of being that, not necessarily a midfield conductor, but I feel like I tend to see him getting on the ball, moving into positions where he can get the ball, and almost being that midfielder who will cover 20 yards to pick it up off a center back or to pick it off of like one of the fullbacks and then turn and carry it into the midfield and then find a pass. And I think he is sort of a good driving engine for this Cameroon team. I think I just like I remain slightly confused by them because it feels dismissive to say like I'm not quite sure how good they are still with them topping this group, with them being convincing, with them scoring goals. I think it is just the sort of directness of the attack and how sometimes it seems slightly disjointed. That would be my only concern about them. But I do have a significant amount of love for Nuhu. My daughter has an elephant named Nuhu, and now she might have to dress up in Cameroon colors for their knockout round game. So I still feel like they will make a run. I won't be surprised if they make it all the way to the final. They've got the home support behind them as well, and that can't hurt either.
Graham, was this a weak group in terms of, I mean, Ethiopia didn't offer, they did get a draw, of course, in their final game against Burkina Faso, but have Cameroon been challenged, would you say?
Obviously, in their last game there in the group, you know, drew with Cape Verde, and I think Cape Verde in general, they're one of the teams who are obviously waiting to find out whether they have progressed or not. They got the win against Ethiopia in their first game. They then lose to Burkina Faso just 1-0, so that's quite a narrow game as well, and then 1-1 against Cameroon. So it's certainly true that there isn't another heavyweight in this group in the same way that there are in other groups where there's two heavyweights, and Cameroon have maybe been allowed to ease themselves into the tournament slightly. But I think it's maybe, not that I'm suggesting you were doing this, but I think it's maybe slightly dismissive to say there isn't quality in this group, because I do think there has been quality watching some of the teams. Cape Verde in particular have acquitted themselves pretty well.
I think my question came from a point that Ethiopia weren't good, Graham.
Fair enough.
Taylor, anything else on Group A, or should we move on to the next group?
Yeah, I think we can move.
Let's do it. Group B, Senegal and Guinea are through in that one in the top two spots. Malawi can be the third place team. They can go through as a third place team. They are owners. Taylor, you sent a group to a picture to our group chat earlier of their squad numbers, Malawi.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell us about them?
I mean, they're just enormous, and I'm into it because there's so many times we've talked about this in past tournaments. Teams have numbers that are either too small, or the font doesn't stand out, or the color scheme doesn't work, and it makes it impossible to see what the numbers are. I love that Malawi have gone the opposite route and made them as enormous as possible, and oftentimes in clashing colors as well. So you can definitely tell who is on the pitch, but I guess also the downside of that would be if you are trying to like not let the referee keep track of you and what you're doing in a game, then maybe having gigantic red numbers might be a giveaway when he's trying to remember. Yeah, number 7 has done that a couple times when that number 7 is in size 400 font.
Yeah, it's a good design feature. I like it a lot. I wish we saw it more often. Zimbabwe are in fourth place. They finished fourth place in this group. They're out. They were the first team to be eliminated, in fact, when they lost to Malawi last week, even though they did win their final game. We should probably start the conversation with Senegal, though, Graham. They are through, despite scoring just one goal, the aforementioned 97th-minute penalty in their opening game. Is it right that they've gone through? It feels very Portugal Euro 2016 to go through like that. They're one of the favourite teams of this tournament from the outset. They are, to be fair, they've got a good defence. They're the only team that's yet to concede in this entire tournament. But got to score a few more goals, haven't they, Graham?
Yeah, I think that's the headline of their tournament so far, is struggling for goals. And they were expected to be one of the strongest teams at this tournament. And they're still in relatively decent shape, in that, as you say, they've not lost. They've won one, drawn two, haven't conceded yet, but have only scored one. And as you say, that one goal comes from a penalty kick in the 6th minute of stoppage time. So they haven't scored in open play yet. And I think when you look at the setup of Senegal, and I looked through, I mean, I've watched a couple of their games anyway in this tournament live, and I also looked through some of their stats and their tactical sheets and so on, and who scored. And when you look at the setup of Senegal, they are clearly set up to try and harness Sadio Mane, who is the, you know, they've got a talented squad, but he is the superstar of this squad, and that he's one of the best players in the world. And they play in this 4-3-3 shape with Mane. He has sometimes played in the left, but he's most commonly played through the middle in this tournament. And I think that's just because, you know, he's the best goal scorer they have, and they want to get him in as many goal scoring positions as possible. But their midfield three in their last game in particular against Malawi was Koyate, Mendy, and Idrissa Gana Gueye. That is a solid protective midfield three, but I don't see much creativity in that midfield. And Liverpool, obviously, where Mane plays, and they play in a 4-3-3 as well, their midfield can be, you know, solid rather than creative as well, but they obviously have the fullbacks that make up for that, any lack of creativity in the centre of the pitch. And Senegal don't really have that to the same extent. So basically, their attack, and Mane in particular, and the games that I've watched, have been pretty isolated. So it becomes a case of, well, how do you solve that? If they want to stick with the the three quality players in the centre of the pitch, which I could understand why they want to do that, because they are a very solid team and obviously they are three very experienced, high quality players. Maybe you switch the system. I was thinking maybe you could get wing backs involved and maybe push your full backs further up the pitch. So that's where you're getting the width. That's where you're getting the creativity. Or you just try and, as you say, Ryan, Portugal your way all the way through this tournament. I guess once you get into the knockout rounds, not scoring goals now that they're through the group, not scoring goals isn't the biggest issue, given that you can win games without scoring goals. So yeah, that could be an option for them as well.
I mean, that is a valid option in tournament soccer, is it not, Graham? As I say, I say it slightly facetiously about Portugal, but the teams who do well in tournaments tend not to be the ones who win games
exactly
by four in the last minute. It's ones who get through with solid defending.
Yeah, the teams that win international tournaments tend to be the ones that are good in defence, and Senegal are. So maybe they don't need to change anything at all, and I'm talking rubbish.
Yeah. My contrasting opinion would be that, like, I would agree with you all if they had scored more than one goal, which was a penalty, as we've already said a couple times. And I think I say that to say that, like, you can definitely grind your way through, especially as you get to the knockout round. If teams start to feel the pressure and they're pushing for their own winner, then you can capitalize and maybe find that space, find that opportunity on the counter. But also, we can see teams grind their way through regulation and extra time. And if you're relying on penalties, and if that happens a couple different times, it does end up feeling more like a coin flip than it is like decided tactics. And so, to Graham's point, looking at, like, I think against Malawi in the second half at one point, late in the second half, in like the 68th minute, I think they had something like 78% possession, but an equal number of shots to Malawi. And to me, that says there is that kind of lack of creativity, that inability to find clear-cut goal-scoring chances on a consistent basis. I think if they can get a couple more of those, if they can score a goal or two to open the knockout round, I will feel much better about Senegal than I do right now. That might also be because I had really high hopes for them, and I thought they were going to be this kind of freewheeling attacking team with a really solid defensive foundation. The solid defensive foundation has been the case, less so the freewheeling attack, and I would like that to maybe open up a bit more, or maybe they do just end up grinding their way to the final. Either way, I'm glad that Senegal have made it to the next part of this competition. I just hope that they lighten it up a little bit more after that.
Taylor, that possession to shots ratio sounds very Spain to me.
Right? Yeah, which is like, but then Spain, I guess, yeah, that's a good analogy, because then Spain sometimes end up grinding their way through and opening up and winning games in convincing fashion, and other times they get knocked out of tournaments in fairly unceremonious fashion. So I guess we'll just have to wait to see which Spain Senegal are going to be.
Graham, we're 20 minutes into this podcast and we haven't discussed kits yet, apart from Malawi's large numbers. I understand you've got a favourite in this group.
Yeah, so there are a lot of good kits at AFCON this year, by the way. As there usually is at this tournament, but I think Zimbabwe's edges it over everyone else's. So for anyone who hasn't seen it, it features, it's yellow with red, orange, green and black sort of tears, is how I would describe it, down the chest, starting from the shoulder. So it's kind of got that sash quality. It's not a sash, it doesn't go all the way, but it's got that quality. And obviously the colours reflect the country's flag. And it's bold and very distinctive, and no one else has that look, and it's very clearly Zimbabwean, and it's very well executed. And yeah, so it's my favourite. I had to create a list, and there was a number on there. Nigeria, they're always up there. I think their kits for this tournament are really good, both the home and away. I like the away as well. Cape Verde, I think I might have already said on this podcast, Cape Verde's is very nice, the blue one with the gold trim. But Zimbabwe takes the number one spot.
They do indeed, but they take the number four spot in Group B, so they are very much going home from this tournament. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll move on to Group C.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick and mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth. And with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day to day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Total Soccer Show, we are back. We are talking Africa Cup of Nations Group C. Morocco and Gabon are through in this group. Gabon are through without the assistance of Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who has made his exit from the tournament, reportedly due to medical reasons. It seems there's cardiac lesions, the reports say, which is due to the COVID case that he had. There's also some rumours circulating that there might be other extracurricular reasons for his absence, but we won't speculate upon those. Big story in this group, though, perhaps Comoros coming through in third place here. Dramatic 3-2 win over 10-man Ghana on Tuesday. The BBC calling this one of the biggest shocks in AFCON history, that game. Mentioning Ghana there, finishing bottom. Who saw that coming? A humiliating exit for them at the hands of Comoros, this one. The four-time champions. It's the first time Ghana have failed to win at least one group stage match in 22 appearances in this tournament. Taylor, that's pretty shocking, isn't it? Ghana, with a lot of top-tier talent in their side, to go out in this manner.
Yeah, my predictions haven't been great for this tournament so far. Group C is the one where I really got it wrong, because I was thinking Ghana might be poised for a strong run. That was definitely not the case. I thought Gabon might sort of crumble pretty quickly because of Aubameyang, because of some issues with their federation. That has not been the case either. So very wrong across the board on this one. But watching the Ghana's 3-2 loss to Comoros, that game was awesome. That might be my favorite game of the tournament so far, because Ghana going down, they fight back. I think they go down 2-0. They fight back to 2-2. That's with the red card to Andre Ayew. Then it ends up being Ahmed Monyi getting his second goal of the game, the very late winner. And it felt fitting for the way this tournament has gone for Ghana. A Ghana team that I thought would be stronger, did have enough talent there to at the very least make it out of the knockout round. To me, this sort of signifies there are major issues with the Ghana national team that will have to be dealt with. I think it will probably need to do some chopping and changing, some getting in some new names, because the AU brothers, for example, who I thought would be able to thrive, would have a strong tournament, have done the opposite of that. Andre, especially with the red card. I think it just has not been the tournament I was expecting from Ghana. And I do have, I don't know, I think it's because of how many times the U.S. played them in World Cups and historically. There's a soft spot in my heart for Ghana, for the Black Stars, and I was sad to see them have the tournament they have had, but it does mean that we've gotten other teams rising to the occasion, Morocco and Gabon, but even Comoros as well in that third place spot. Seems very unlikely, or completely unlikely, that they will make it to the knockout round as one of the best fourth place finishers, but still, a win over Ghana is probably a good way to end this tournament for them.
Definitely. Graham, what did you think about Ghana finishing bottom of the pile? That wasn't one we predicted before this tournament started.
No, it certainly wasn't, and obviously they are one of the sort of African heavyweights, so we expected that they would probably make it out of the groups at least. But in hindsight, you know, looking at their team now, I think going, it's very similar to what Taylor's saying there. You know, it seems like maybe they do have a rebuild ahead of them. You know, you look at the, even just on an individual basis, and there was a lot wrong from a tactical point of view with their performances. You know, they switched systems between the first game and the second game. You, and the third game, you look at the difference between their first game, they lose 1-0 to Morocco. They're very kind of stagnant, I think it's fair to say. And then in the last game, it was like all structure was out the window entirely. Yep. So there's a lot of tactical issues with this team as well. But as on an individual basis as well, if you compare it to some of the other heavyweights in this competition, you know, your Ivory Coasts, your Nigeria, your Senegals, etc., I think they are lacking on talent as well. And I think that is embodied by the AU brothers, who obviously have been excellent performers for Ghana and are proven at the highest level. But they're maybe getting on a little bit now, and maybe some new ideas are needed. Thomas Partey is maybe the biggest name in that team right now that you'd say he's doing it at a high level in the peak of his career at this moment. You know, Amarty is a decent player as well in centre-back. But other than that, it does feel like a replenishment is kind of needed of this squad over the next few years.
Yep, no parties in Ghana apart from Thomas, of course. We mentioned the 3-2 win for Comoros over Ghana. Sorry about that, I had to get that one in. Comoros' 3-2 win over Ghana on Tuesday. Graham, there was another pretty wild game that evening, also between Gabon and Morocco.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mentioned that earlier in the pod. That for me, this was the best night of the whole tournament. So you had a 2-2 draw between Gabon and Morocco. I like a lot of what I see from Morocco, and obviously they have those big names, and your eye is drawn to, in particular, Achraf Hakimi. Sorry, I don't know why I struggled with that so much. That's a player I've spoken about many times before. And yeah, it's not so much of a surprise that he is a key player for Morocco. He scored a magnificent free kick in this game against Gabon. Question marks over the goalkeeping, perhaps. He seemed to go with two hands rather than maybe one hand might have been better. But nonetheless, it's right in the far corner of the net, this free kick. And I think Hakimi has been one of Morocco's standout performers in all three games that they've played. He's doing that thing that he tends to do, where he is a whole wing in one man, and that's such an advantage for a team where you can basically just leave a whole side to him, and his attacking output certainly is incredible. And then obviously Morocco we haven't seen the best of Youssef En-Nesyri yet, who obviously is the Sevilla striker, watched lots of him in La Liga. He hasn't really hit top gear yet, but I think if they can get Hakimi and En-Nesyri on the same page, that's the sort of, you know, in international football, if you have one or two relationships, that can be enough to tip a team over the edge. So I'll be looking out for that in knockout rounds, because I think that could be the thing that, at the moment, I think Morocco, from what I've seen of them, are like a second tier team. They're not quite up there with the Nigerias and the maybe even Senegals in terms of their defensive prowess, but they could make that step up, I think.
So on Tuesday, when we had these two cracking games, I chose to watch Brighton-Chelsea, the two drawingest teams that ever drawed. Congratulations to me.
Graham, you mentioned Hakimi there. Like, with these tournaments, with big tournaments, you sometimes get the big names sort of rising to the occasion, and then you get the opposite of that when the big name doesn't have the tournament we expected, underperforms, and the team crashes out. Would you say Hakimi, of all the big names in this tournament, is the one who is sort of like backing up the billing thus far?
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it, but yeah, I think that's probably right. I mean, Nigeria have got a few big names who are performing well. I think that's fair, but I would say Hakimi's maybe a bigger name than who is playing well for Nigeria, if that makes sense. And he's playing really well, so yeah, I would probably agree with that. Yeah, he's living up to his billing.
And this is, again, that Morocco team that Vahid Halihodzic decided to leave out some of their best players. No Zayek, no Mazraoui, no Amin Harit. So it does feel like he's kind of given the keys to Hakimi, especially when it comes to free kicks. And I like that Hakimi has also taken that sort of approach of just give me the ball and let me shoot and I will make things happen. And that's all that we need to do.
And see, the thing with that Ziyech omission, I still think it doesn't really make much sense. You'd maybe want him in the squad as an option.
Yep.
But basically, given that his role tends to be on the right side of a front three, it kind of makes sense that he's not involved, because you basically just want everyone out of Hakimi's way on that right side. And so Ziyech might just congest things a little bit. But yeah, maybe have him on the bench would be an idea.
Maybe.
Seems like a good weapon to have to me. Before we leave this group, Graham, just a quick further note on Comoros, who I'm geographically ignorant. I don't think I'd even heard of Comoros before this tournament, if I'm completely honest. But it's been one of those really fun stories. And there's a good chance, well, there's a medium chance, I'll say, of them going through to the knockout stage based on their third place ranking.
Yep, so you beat me to my confession as well. In full honesty, this was a country, to my shame, I hadn't heard of before AFCON. And maybe that makes me ignorant, and I apologise if that's the case. I like to think I'm pretty good with geography, but yeah, not somewhere that I knew of. But they epitomise why AFCON is so special. This is their first ever Africa Cup of Nations. And now, after that win over Ghana, they hadn't scored a goal at AFCON until they then scored three against one of the heavyweights of African football. They're now, you know, their manager and their players are now talking about aiming for the World Cup. And that might seem ridiculous, but there's precedent for it, where you have smaller nations who use AFCON as a platform. They then get established at that level, and then they go on to bigger and bigger things. And, you know, I think that's great. And I think that shows how this tournament can accelerate the mobility of some of the smaller nations. You know, the World Cup might be a way off for them right now, but it might not be in, you know, 10 years to come or whatever. And as I say, it gives them a platform, and maybe even more valuable, it gives them inspiration as a football nation. You know, all the, it's a cliche, but, you know, all the children that will have watched that, you know, then that's now, you can't be what you can't see. And now they've seen their team go to the Africa Cup of Nations and get a big win against a big team. So, yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah, it's in the hands of groups D, E and F as to whether Comoros do go through with their third place ranking. Good luck to them. Tay-Tay, anything else on Group C before we head on?
Yeah, I wanted to go back to Gabon really, really briefly just to mention that I thought, as I said, they would crumble a bit. They have been without Aubameyang. That has not been a problem. And I would argue it has not been a problem because they have a front two that is functioning. Ghana had the Ayew brothers who could not get it together. But with Gabon, we have Aaron Bupenza of Al Arabi and Jim Alavina of Clermont. And I think that front two has been super fun to watch. I think Gabon on the whole are really fun to watch. I like Gaylor Kanga in the middle. He will hit that 40-yard free kick if he wants to, and he will put it on frame and force a save somehow. But Bupenza, skillful, quick-footed, very strong in the box, can hold off a defender and still get a shot. He forces the own goal in their game against Ghana, I believe it was. And then Alavina, two goals and an assist, sort of, because he forces that own goal to happen as well. But just hard-working, and I have him as like a chaos thriver. Like, he just creates chaos. He hassles people. He puts in challenges. He's running everywhere. And I feel like he's very difficult to track, difficult to mark, and makes that team super fun to watch. So I'm looking forward to their knockout round game. And I won't be surprised if they get past Burkina Faso and Gabon make it to at least the quarterfinals.
Wonderful stuff. Group D is still in progress. The final group game is going to be played on this very Wednesday as we record. As we record, though, Nigeria are in top spot. They are assured to advance to the knockout round. Egypt in second, Guinea-Bissau third, and Sudan fourth. This group, Taylor, wide open. All three other teams can qualify.
They can. It feels, with that said, that Nigeria have very much cemented that top spot. I would fully expect Nigeria to get their win on the final day as well, because they have been really, really comprehensively good. I think they are my favorites to win this competition. But yeah, without Nigeria in the conversation, Egypt doing Egypt things. I thought they would be better. I was wrong. Guinea and Sudan also in the conversation, but it does feel like it will end up being Nigeria and Egypt advancing. But then I would fully expect Nigeria to make a much deeper run than Egypt, because Egypt remain a team built around Mohamed Salah, and I thought that would be to their benefit this time around. It does not feel like it is thus far.
Graham, feels like we're shaking out a few serious contenders so far in this pod. Do you place Nigeria among them?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with Taylor. They are the not just the best team in terms of their individual quality I've seen so far, but just in terms of their structure. They started their campaign with a 1-0 win over Egypt, which obviously was the first sort of heavyweight clash of the tournament, kind of laid in a marker. They then backed that up with a 3-1 win over Sudan, which was really pretty comfortable for them. And I like this system they're using, this 4-2-2-2 system. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've spoken a bit about that shape on this podcast recently with Ranić taking over at Manchester United. And well, if Ranić, who's already abandoned that system, by the way, yesterday he was speaking about going to 4-3-3, I think it was. If he's looking for evidence on how it can work, Nigeria are showing him how it can work. I think it gives them a lot of control, but it doesn't keep them too rigid. I think you still give freedom to the likes of Samu Chukwueze. There's a lot of mobility there. I think Chukwueze has I'm a big fan of his in general. I watched a lot of him in La Liga. I think he's got huge potential. I expect he'll make a big move at some point in his career. Not that Villarreal are you know, a small club. They're competing at a high level, but I'm talking to one of the super clubs. I expect him to get to that level at some point. And it's just been fun to see him play well in this tournament. He's looked really dangerous. I thought he was arguably the best player on the pitch against Sudan, although Moses Simon also had an excellent game in that one. He's been really good in that Nigeria midfield. And then another player I wanted to mention who I have been keeping a close eye on because of his links to Scotland is Joe Aribo. So he, of course, plays for Rangers, and he's been very good in both games that he's played for Nigeria. I think he's perfect for that 4-2-2-2 system. He's been playing alongside Ndidi, which is a slightly deeper role to the one he plays for Rangers. He's more advanced for Rangers, but I think he still has the freedom to get forwards, and his performances at this level have just confirmed to me that Rangers have a real player on their hands. I expect that he will probably leave Rangers in the summer, probably for the Premier League. And I think when he does that, they'll get a good transfer fee for him. I mean, I already liked what I saw from Aribo, but his performances have just kind of confirmed to me it's not Rangers that are making him good. He's actually just a good player for everyone, including Nigeria.
Graham, I totally agree with you about Aribo. And I think it's a credit to him and to Nigeria's manager, Augustine Agwavan. I apologize if I butchered that one, that he also has adaptability when it comes to that system. Because against Sudan, once Nigeria were up 1-0, the game, I think, lost a little bit of the energy. And that was also the case for Egypt at times. It felt like kind of both teams were feeling each other out. Iheanacho gets the goal, and then it was a little bit static. And in both of those games, I saw them push Aribo further up the pitch, and Ndidi basically was allowed to conduct the midfield as he wanted to turn with passes from the center backs and then play forward. And it felt like once they recognize that defenses are sitting off or giving them a little bit of time on the ball, they are happy to take that time and change the structure just a little bit so that they can get more attackers into more threatening positions and just get more numbers further forward. And I think that adaptability, that ability to adjust as they need to, because then as the flow of the game changes and maybe Egypt are pressing for an equalizer, that's where Aribo will like play deeper as he was at the start of the game. But sort of that flexibility is so important once we move into the knockout rounds, and I think Nigeria are well poised to take advantage of that.
Taylor, a question for you. If we were to establish an AFCON fun to watch index, and we put maybe Senegal somewhere near the base, where do Nigeria appear on said index?
Probably top. I think because they have so many attackers, as Graham mentioned, but there's so many interesting stories as well that I find them to be one of those teams that once you start reading about them, you can spend a good hour just reading about individual players. Taiwo Awoniyi is one who I knew the name, I think maybe because of FIFA, but I didn't know much about him. And I ended up reading basically his entire Wikipedia and then a couple other things. I found it really interesting. He joined Liverpool in August of 2015. He was sold to Union Berlin this past summer. In the intervening years, he was loaned 7 times, plays for 7 different clubs on loan, never plays for Liverpool, now has 9 goals and 17 appearances for Union Berlin, and is a very important player for Nigeria, and I think has very few appearances, like maybe only 3 or 13, or it's a limited number for a player of his caliber. And I just think you've got personalities, you've got fairly big names, you've got a lot of talent, and then you still have moments of uncertainty where you will have a center back fall over out of nowhere because the pitch is terrible. And so you still get that unpredictability as well. But I think Nigeria are near the top, if not top, of that index.
Graham, we are recording just before Egypt take on Sudan. It looks like Egypt are probably going to clinch second place in Group D. Your thoughts on them having only scored 1 goal from their first 2 games from some guy called Mo Salah. How do you like their chances?
It's I don't know how to answer that about Egypt, to be perfectly honest. I think it's difficult to judge them so far. It feels like they're doing that classic major tournament thing of starting quite slowly and growing into the tournament, but we've yet to see them do the latter part, and so you don't know whether they're just starting slowly and oh wait, they finished slowly as well and now they're out. maybe that'll happen as they move into the knockout rounds. I think you know, their passage into the knockout rounds, they can be pretty sure of that. But They do have quality. You know, Salah is the notable example, but Mohamed Elneny, Higazi as well. You know, Carlos Queiroz, their head coach, is an experienced manager, to say the least, at international level. That's how I'm going to describe him.
Sure.
As others may call him a journeyman. Not me, of course. Experienced at international level is his tagline. But it just feels to me like they're maybe in transition, similar to what I said about Ghana, where they just maybe need some new ideas, and it feels like, as Taylor referenced earlier, they are banking a lot on Salah, and for him not just to provide goals but just set the tone, and they've changed their tactical structure, I was reading, pretty much to suit him, to try and make it as similar as his role to Liverpool, but the rest of the players around him are not really Liverpool standard, so it's quite disjointed at times. So I don't know as the honest answer, and maybe we'll never know how good Egypt are. They could be one of those teams at a tournament that just kind of go out with a whimper. I think that's a possibility.
Do y'all know, you know, in basketball, forgive me because I'm not a basketball like knowledge haver, that's the term. Yeah. But you have a limited time once you inbound the ball to get it past half court, correct?
Sure.
All right.
Okay.
To extend this analogy that none of us are entirely sure of, Egypt play as though, let's say it's like 10 seconds to get it up. I think it's like 5, but it might be 10. Like, Egypt will pass the ball around, like, under their rim for the first 9 seconds of that, and then they're just like, well, we got 1 second left, hoof it long. That's what I see from them in every single game. Or not every single game, but a lot of the time. It's sort of slow possession out of the back into theoretically midfield, but they kind of move the ball there, they'll string passes together, and then inevitably a midfielder or a fullback just pings that ball long, usually for Mohamed Salah or an on-rushing sort of wide attacker. But there's not a lot of like creativity through the middle. They don't have a player who seems comfortable turning under pressure and distributing the ball and keeping possession central. It seems like they end up going long almost every time, and I think that makes it just very disjointed from start to finish.
But that's what I mean, Taylor, by like they have it's like they've watched a Liverpool match once and they're like, yep, well, Virgil van Dijk sends long balls into Salah, so we're just going to do that. It's like if you ordered Liverpool off you know, that site Wish, that you see the things advertised online, and they're nothing like what the brand version is. Yeah, Egypt or Liverpool if you order them off Wish.
There we go.
So Group D contains knockoff Liverpool. There we have it. There we go. That's Group D. Group E, in my opinion, is the most interesting group by some distance. Let's tackle that after this quick pause.
Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public, the other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back. AFCON Group E, the group of interestingness, if you will. The final group games of this group are taking place on Thursday. Ivory Coast atop, they are guaranteed at least third place in this one. Equatorial Guinea in second, thanks to a sensational win over Algeria. And Sierra Leone are in third. They've been called the story of the tournament in this one. Two draws they've gotten and taken 2 points from the Ivory Coast and Algeria. Touted as two of the strongest teams on the continent before this tournament. They've got a very impressive story. Algeria, though, one word for them, Taylor. Yikes. Final game for them on Thursday against the Ivory Coast. This is a really well-poised group because every team in it needs points on this final day. And yeah, that's a blockbuster, Ivory Coast versus Algeria. Or is it?
I think it is. I think it could be. And then I'm going to be disastrously wrong when Ivory Coast win this 3-0. But Algeria, I am completely confused by this Algeria team because they do have talent and they obviously have standout figures like Riyad Mahrez. But when you look at their games and the stats behind them, it gets very confusing very quickly. Against Equatorial Guinea, they have 69% possession. Against Sierra Leone at 66. They completed 351 passes in one game, 433 in the other, to each time the opponent had like maybe like 150 or thereabouts. So they're dominating possession, they're dominating passes, they're significantly dominating chances created in both games, and yet they're not able to convert those. And I can't tell for the life of me if that is them just misfiring and not playing as a unit, or if that is sort of teams being defensive, frustrating them, and they haven't quite clicked. And I think that makes it poised for a very interesting game against Ivory Coast, because though they are top, Les Elephants, there's my French pronunciation on the one word that I can pronounce sort of correctly, they're not in a position where they can rest on their laurels. If, let's say, Sierra Leone or Equatorial Guinea were to win, I think, and Algeria were to get a win, it could cause some problems for Ivory Coast. So they're going to come into this one fully ready to go. Algeria needing the full win, I don't know if it will click and it will be this kind of back and forth with goals in it, or if it will continue to be no goals scored but lots of opportunities for Algeria and then Ivory Coast get one or two in that game. It could go either way, and I think that's what makes it a really, really fascinating one for me.
Algeria are averaging more shots per game than any other team in this competition so far. And they have been the biggest flop of the competition so far, obviously, as the holders sitting bottom of their group after two games. They are a difficult one to work out, but if I'm going to make a prediction, just because of the way Ivory Coast are probably, you know, maybe that they're not going to be as motivated as they might have been in other circumstances for that final group game, I think Algeria are going to squeak through with a win, and I think it's going to maybe not come good for them. I'm not saying that all their problems are going to be solved, but I think they'll get a result and they'll go through. Just because if they're averaging that many shots per game, they're creating chances, they're having a good share of possession. You know, they're also averaging, I think it's the top share of possession in the tournament as well. So they're controlling games and they're creating chances and they're taking shots, but they're not getting results. It's a weird one, and I think at some point there will be a course correction of some kind.
It's a weird groupie because as we say, Algeria are bottom with 1 point. But if my math is correct, if they beat Ivory Coast 2-0, they can win the group if Equatorial Guinea don't win. So it's kind of crazy.
I think it's even 1-0 would put them ahead of Ivory Coast, because that would put them both on 4 points, and then they would both have a zero goal difference. I'm assuming then it goes to either goals scored or head-to-head. I'm not sure what the next tiebreaker is. But yeah, there's a realistic possibility in which if Equatorial Guinea were to get a draw, then we have, and Algeria win, Ivory Coast lose, we have three teams on 4 points, and there's a lot of tie-breaking to be done. But I'm hoping that Equatorial Guinea lose to Sierra Leone, not because I have any beef with Equatorial Guinea, but because I really want Sierra Leone to continue their run. They've been such a great story. You all talked about it on Weekend Review. I'm hoping they stay alive in this competition at the expense of Equatorial Guinea. But either way, I think this group is going to be very interesting, because it could look exactly as it does on the final day, after the final day, or it could look completely different, and that is great for neutrals, maybe less so for people who have a rooted interest in any one of these teams.
Yeah, how about Sierra Leone, Graham? They have been called the story of the tournament, as I say. That game against the Ivory Coast at the weekend, the 2-2 with the 93rd minute equaliser, was a brilliant game. And also, Was it just me, Graham, or were you surprised when Stephen Corker showed up in this side? You know,
he's mentioned it. Graham's mentioned that like twice in different shows. It's like Stephen Corker plays for them somehow. It's always a throwaway line from Graham, and it always makes me happy when it is.
It's wild. He was in the Team GB team for the Olympics.
Yeah, he has had a really weird international career because he actually played for England in the same. This isn't in my research, so I'm flying a little bit here. But I think he played in the same game that Wilfried Zaha played for England. England as well, in a friendly, and obviously friendlies don't, you know, lock you into a national team. So that is bizarre that they're now playing in the same Africa Cup of Nations for two different nations. Stephen Corker, yeah, he played for Team GB. He's got an England friendly cap to his name. He was also meant to be called into a Scotland squad once until he got injured. So he was ready to commit to Scotland, and now he's playing for Sierra Leone. Yeah. Bizarre.
I think if my research is correct, he's also from Staines, like Ali G, so he might also be in the Staines Massive, which is another thing to put on his resume. But Graham, Sierra Leone, what do you think of their story here?
Yeah, so I'm probably going to repeat a bit of what I said on Weekend Review, but if listeners didn't catch Weekend Review, they are a great story. They haven't been at Africa Cup of Nations since 1996. Obviously, Sierra Leone is a country we associate with not so savoury things, I think it's fair to say. You know, a country that became synonymous with tragedy and conflict, and more recently Ebola, and all the way through their squad there's great stories. You have the goalkeeper Mohamed Camara, who's been one of the stars of the tournament so far for me. He picked up Man of the Match award for his performance in the first game against Algeria. He bursts into tears when he is handed that award. And then in the next game against Ivory Coast, he saves a penalty from Frank Kessie. He can be a little bit unorthodox at times, I think it's fair to say. But what I like about him is everything he does is about keeping the ball out of the net. And he doesn't care much for convention. He doesn't care if the technique of what he's doing isn't particularly spot on. If he keeps the ball out of the net, well, I've done my job. And I like that about him. Yeah, he and another player called Camara, Moussa Noah Camara, they play domestic football in Sierra Leone. There are a number of players who play in the domestic league here. And that domestic league was basically shut down during the Ebola crisis in that country. Football as a whole was pretty much shut down all the way throughout that country. I'm not just talking about clubs, talking about youth systems, academies, everything. And so that this has happened now, and that out of those circumstances, you know, you have a national team that is succeeding at the top level of African football. I just think is fantastic. And then weirdly, you also have kind of a London-born contingent, which includes Kevin Wright, who came through the system at Chelsea, Osman Kakai of QPR, Sule Kakai, who plays for Wycombe Wanderers, and then obviously Stephen Corker, who we've already mentioned. So It's a great story. I am personally rooting for them to get out of the group. I really hope that they go and do it.
Wonderful stuff. And Graham, a quick note on Ivory Coast as well. Nicola Pepe, who was broken out of Arteta prison to do some good things here.
Yeah, the anti-Aubameyang, I guess. Yeah, we've spoken about him before on the podcast. Joe had some interesting thoughts on the Weekend Review about how Ivory Coast are set up. I would echo a lot of those thoughts. I like the balance of their attack. So they have Wilfried Zaha on the left, Nicola Pepe on the right, and then Sebastien Haller through the centre. In terms of a front three, I don't see a stronger front three in this tournament. I like how Pepe and Zaha are wingers, you know, true wingers, and then Haller, who he does involve himself a lot in the build-up play, but obviously he's quite an orthodox front man, and I just think I like the balance of that, and especially when you have a midfield, and behind them a midfield three of Kessie and Sangare, who's highly rated young midfielder for PSV. Well, he's maybe not that young, I think he's maybe 24, 25, but then you have Seri as well, whose career maybe hasn't panned out as we all thought he would. Remember, he was on his way to Barcelona and then ended up at Fulham, which was a strange one, but he's still a high-quality player. So basically what I'm saying is I like the Ivory Coast setup, and I like that attack with Pepe in particular.
Yeah, so Group E, the group of interestingness, is delicately poised. Ivory Coast versus Algeria and Sierra Leone against Equatorial Guinea on Thursday. Taylor, anything more on the group of interestingness before we move on to the group of much less interestingness?
Yes, I have a philosophical question that I do not have written down, but I will try to make sense on the fly. If a game occurs and Wilfried Zaha is playing in it and doesn't get horrifically foul, has that game actually occurred? Because it does feel to me like no matter where he is playing, club or country, he will be fouled horrifically at least once a game. Obviously, that was the case for the Sierra Leone penalty that was conceded. I feel like I always see him just getting cleared out at least once a game. And it feels like if he doesn't, I'm not sure that game actually took place.
I think I just achieved a moment of zen thinking about your conundrum there. Thank you very much for that, Taylor.
That's what I'm going for, baby. That's what I'm going for.
All right, let's finish off with Group F, which also finishes on Thursday. Gambia at the top at the moment with 4 points. Mali in second place. Tunisia in third. And Mauritania, who are eliminated from this group, with Nilpois in fourth place. Mauritania, like Comoros, are in this tournament for the first time in their history. It's a pretty big country by landmass, certainly. It's next to Mali and north of Senegal in the northwest of the continent. Honestly, gents, I don't have much on this group apart from this is where the referee tried to end the game several times in that opening weekend, Graham.
Yeah, I mean that was the one of the biggest talking points of the whole tournament. It was one of those things where I had people who I know are not watching much of Africa Cup of Nations at the moment that, you know, they were messaging me about that, for anyone who hasn't seen it. So it happened in a match between Tunisia and Mali. The match was ended prematurely, not once, but twice. So basically the referee, a Zambian named Jani Sakawi, I apologise if I have mispronounced that, but he's initially signalled for full time on 86 minutes. He ended the match. The players then said, oh wait, no, there's still like 5 minutes to go plus stoppage time. He then ended it again on 89 minutes and 44 seconds. And the players left the pitch and then there were more complaints. And then 20 minutes later, after the Mali manager's post-match press conference had begun, and the Tunisian players were in their ice baths and everything, the tournament organisers ordered the players to return to the field to play out the closing seconds in injury time, but then Tunisia's players didn't return to the pitch, and then Mali were just declared winners. And then in typical, this tournament can be quite chaotic. I don't think anything else is happening. It's not like there's going to be an investigation or anything. I think they just went, oh, well, okay, 89 minutes, 44 seconds. It was unlikely anything more was going to happen. It was a strange episode.
It was indeed. Taylor, any thoughts on this group? It feels like the winner of this tournament probably isn't coming from Group F.
Yeah, I think so. But I honestly can't tell if that is, like, I'll speak for myself and just say my bias, because I know probably the least about this group of any of the groups. I feel like there are fewer household names across the board. I feel like of the teams that I do know, like I know the most players from Mali, but I wouldn't go far enough to say that I know them with any level of like fluency. So if anything, I think this is one that maybe I need to pay a bit more attention to as we have this final game, because it could go either way with three teams all in contention to finish top or at the very least make it to the next round. And as we've talked about previously, there are exciting players with each team, including with Tunisia. Graham, I know that you wanted to keep an eye on Hannibal Mejbri, the Manchester United player. I have not paid much attention to him, so I do not know how well he has been doing. I'm assuming he's doing better than El Bilal Touré, playing for Mali in that Tunisia game. Subs on in the 81st minute, red card in the 87th. I don't feel like that was the strongest performance we've seen, but it is one of the most interesting ones, so I wanted to make sure to note it before we wrapped up.
Wonderful stuff. Before we do wrap up, gents, one final question for you both. If you had to place a bet on the winner of this tournament at this stage where we are, who's it going to be? For me, it's Senegal. I feel like they're going to Portugal their way through this thing. Graham?
Nigeria. I've learned my lesson from the Euros, where Italy were the best team early on, and there's this weird train of thought that says the teams that start international tournaments don't win international tournaments. And then Italy, obviously, as you'll remember well, Ryan Bailey, went on to win that tournament. And so I'm just going to say Nigeria. They've started the best, so why not? I don't have any other evidence to suggest there's a better team out there right now, so yeah.
Fair enough, Taylor.
Yep, I'll go with Graham. I'll say Nigeria. I think Senegal's a good shout, though, Ryan, because they could be that team that grinds their way to the final. They could also be that team, again, the Spain connection, that we keep expecting, like, yeah, but next game, they're going to light it up. They've got the talent. We know they will. Oh, no, it was a 0-0 draw, and they won on penalties. And eventually, they get knocked out and never quite come good. So I could see that happening with Senegal. Could also see them making the final and winning it in dramatic fashion or grinding fashion. But I'm leaning towards Nigeria because I think they will give us the best opportunity for a spectacle in the final and every game along the way.
Wonderful stuff. That final taking place on February 6th. I remind you, the group stage is finishing up on Thursday, the round of 16 starting on Sunday. And we'll be talking plenty more about this tournament on Total Soccer Show. Oh, Taylor, I forgot. We should do probably about 20 minutes or so extolling the virtues of BeIN Sports' coverage, right?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, at least 20 minutes, if not 40 minutes.
Well, maybe we'll do that, but technical difficulties will edit that out, which will be ironic in some ways. In the meantime, Graham Ruthven, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ryan.
Taylor Rockwell, thanking you kindly.
Thank you, Ryan, and thank you to whomever wins Group F for probably winning AFCON because we have jinxed everyone else.
Yeah, they're going to make us look bad, aren't they?
Yeah.
Listen up. Thank you so much. We'll be back with another one soon. Bye!